Listening to KPFT Houston 90.1 FM. Stay tuned for Arab Voices next. Good evening, ahlan wa sahlan, and welcome to Arab Voices on Houston's Pacifica Radio. Listener sponsored commercial free KPFT 90.1 FM with live streaming, podcasting, and online archive of previous shows at both kpft.org and arabvoices.net. This is Saeed, executive producer and host of Arab Voices. I am skipping Arab Voices community calendar this evening, but you can find a comprehensive list of upcoming events in the greater Houston area on our website, and that's arabvoices.net. The Arab American Educational Foundation in Houston held an event last month at Rice University on November 14th titled Christians in the Arab World, History, Demography, and Current Affairs. The guest speaker was Shawqi Qassis, Arab American scientist, author, and translator. I attended that event, and I will be airing it for you this evening. I'd like to first thank Khalil Abu Sharikh for providing me with the audio recording. So let's listen in. The voice you will hear first is that of Dr. Aziz Shibani, president of the Arab American Educational Foundation.
I would like to thank all of you for your interest and your support to the foundation. And in particular, I'd like to thank those who promoted this lecture: Walid Samarna, Claudia, Dana Ashrawi, the ACC, and Saeed for Arab Voices. They all have worked very hard to get this promoted properly. So I hope that you'll have a very enjoyable and educational evening. I would like to thank the board of directors of the AAEF for approving this lecture. I think several of them are already here. The Arab American Educational Foundation was established in 1985 with a simple mission to promote the understanding of the Arab culture and history to the mainstream Americans through establishing chairs. We already have established a chair in 1997 here at Rice. It has been chaired by Osama Maqdisi, who has been out of town. And we are now establishing a chair at the University of Houston. We already raised the $1 million, and now they are interviewing to find a professor. So if you know someone who is specialized in the modern Arab history, please let them apply if they are interested. The foundation is a non-political, it is a secular, non-religious, non-sectarian organization. So whatever speakers say, we don't bear responsibility for it if it has any political connotations. The foundation is interested in bringing to the American public and to the Arab American community some issues that are very hot in the Middle East. And if you know that, you all know that this is the last lecture of the series that started this year earlier. We had Maqdisi spoke about sectarianism, and then we had Robert Fisk spoke about the war in Syria, and before that, or after that, we had a topic about the legacy of Andalus. And today we are having a very special topic. It does not only concern Christians in the Middle East, but all the components. I don't like the word minorities. I like components of societies in the Middle East and here. And therefore, it is important to interact with the speaker and to ask questions because these issues are often misplayed in the media. As you all know, that the Christian Arabs, or the Christians of the Arab world, if you will, because some Christians in the Arab world don't recognize themselves as Arabs, like the Copts or the Maronites or the Assyrians, although maybe our speaker consider all of them are Arabs, but they don't consider themselves Arab, but that doesn't matter. They have to be part of any debate about the future of their countries, and they have to be included in that debate, regardless whether they are Arabs or not Arabs. As you all know, that the wave of darkness that's spreading in the Middle East, in the Arab countries, and surrounding countries is saving no one. And this wave of takfirism is basically against anyone who does not. They divide people simply into adherents and infidels. Anyone who does not follow their method of thinking deserves to be killed, and his wife to be raped, and his property to be confiscated. So يحلل ماله ودينه وعرضه ودمه. فيعني it is an inclu- against everyone, not only against Christians. And it is important to have a healthy understanding of this issue so that we will be able to fight it the right way. And because there are two schools of thinking about this, I was very keen to invite a speaker to speak about the issue from a very constructive angle. There are two schools, if you go now and talk with people. One group of people, many Orientalists and many Christian Arabs, they say, well, the Arab countries, basically the Muslims, inherently are against the other religions. And their history has been violent, and just only certain periods they became a little bit dormant, but any time the situation becomes permitting, they kill other people. So it's an inherent problem. It has been around for 2,000 years, 1,400 years. You cannot really change it. If we approach this from this standpoint, that means you are going to focus on eradicating each other. And Christians will think that the East is for Christians, the East is for Muslims, and the West is for Christians. So France has announced to welcome all the Christians from Syria and Lebanon. كلمات حق يراد بها باطل. So if you understand it the other way, that these components of the same society are targeted by evil powers from inside and outside, then your stance will be different. You will be against those who are carrying this ideology and those who support them and provide them with enforcement ideologically and educationally and provide them with the weapons and politicizing the issue. So it's a political issue, not a religious issue, it's not a sectarian issue. And therefore, we wanted to shed some light on the contributions of the Arab Christians. You know, the Nahda, the Renaissance, basically was a very important part of our history. Like Yazidi, for example, Abu Tursul Bustani, these are mainly Christian people who revived the Arabic language during the time of almost disintegration by the Turks. Siyasat al-Tatrik, they wanted to basically, so they brought the Arabic language into a new frontier so it could survive and continue, all the dictionaries, all the lexicon, and that is a very great thing that the Christian Arabs did to us. So the Nahda was contributed heavily by the Christian Arabs, al-Bustani, al-Yazji, al-Taban al-Afghani, Muhammad Abda, and other people who were enlightened. So it's important to read about al-Nahda every time you have a minute to see what kind of terms of ideology that were established by these guys, that 100 years ago, these terms picked up the hearts and imaginations of millions of Arabs and formed ideologies that led the region for some time. There's a Lebanese diplomat and intellectual, his name is Ghassan Thweini. He was the editor of Al-Nahar. He said that there's a part of Islam in every Christian Arab, and therefore, any future of the region cannot be fruitful without having a dialogue to define something that they both share. And the thing that they both share is what? Citizenship, culture, language, tabbouleh, food, music. So there are so many things that the components of the population in the Arab region can share and build a future than just a narrow form of religion. And therefore, we should expand this. In America, the Arab Americans now are suffering from these divisions, because there are parties that try to pull right and left. The concept that I mentioned earlier, that the West is the home for the Christians and the East is for Muslims. And the enemies of the Arab countries want to get to evacuate Middle East from its Christians, Yazidis, Shabakis, all the components, and that will make it easier, really, to target the region without its main fabric. The cultural fabric is essential for the future of the region. That's why, of course, the board has chosen this topic. Dr. Shoqi Qassis is one of the best people who speak about this topic. Dr. Qassis is not an academician in humanities. He is basically a scientist. He was born in Haifa in 1947 to a family from Rama, Minat Jalil A'la. He grew up and finished his high school in Rama, and then he finished a PhD from Tel Aviv University in 1979, and then he migrated to the United States. He has been living in the United States since then, where he worked as a professor and scientist in multiple places, including UCLA and the NIH, very prestigious place, and for 18 years for GlaxoSmithKline, a giant pharmaceutical company. He published hundreds of articles in very prestigious journals, and he lectured in international conferences. He registered four patents, and he's a member of several international societies. In the year 2004, he became professor at Drexel University. I think someone told me that he or she is a Drexel alumni. She is coming here. So he established programs for Arabic and Jewish language, Hebrew languages, in Drexel University. In 2009, he retired, and he devoted his time for writing about his experience as Palestinian Arab. He wrote a very famous book, Haifa is no Qurtuba. Haifa ليست قرطبة. And you can imagine what is the difference between Haifa and Qurtuba. So in his book, he draws the parallels and why he tells you why Haifa has a different meaning and different flavor than Qurtuba. It is an autobiographic novel. It's being translated to English and Spanish. It was published in 2010, and two editions since then appeared. He supervised and edited the translation of two novels for Suzanne Abulhawa, The Scar of David and Morning in Jenin. Also, he is currently working on several projects. He was working on three books to be published soon in the fields of Arabic language and literature. Number two, editing the English translation of his book, Haifa is not Qurtuba, and translating the Arabian Cradle, History of Middle East Christianity over two millennia. It's a book by Samih Ghanadri. Dr. Qassis is a member of the Arab American community. He participated in multiple social cultural activities for many years. So, ladies and gentlemen, I'm going to open the floor to our speaker, and after that we'll have a session for questions and answers. Please help me to welcome our speaker.
Assalamu alaikum. Thank you, Aziz, for the very informative and interesting introduction. Just a brief statement I would like to make before I start. As Aziz indicated, I'm a Palestinian Arab, or an Arab from Palestine, southwest Syria, if you wish. I'm an Arab nationalist, born to a Christian family of the Orthodox sect from the village of Ar-Rama in Galilee. It's 1 hour to 1.5 hour horseback ride from Lebanon, Syria, or the Sea of Galilee. I am a secular person. I do not belong, repeat, do not belong to any religion or to any sect. And some of what I would say here might reflect that attitude. Let me ask you just last thing. How many of you do not know Arabic? Can you raise your hand? Oh, 7, 8. So I can throw phrases in Arabic. And those who do not know Arabic, my advice, go learn Arabic and teach it to others. تعلموا العربية وعلموها للناس. Now we'll start. We'll have few stops with Christianity and Arab Christians from birth until present day today. We'll start from birth until 632 AD. 632 is the year the Prophet Muhammad died. Prior to starting, I would like to underscore an important point. I use the term Arabs to refer to all those tribes that migrated from the beginning of history until now from the Arabian Peninsula. That includes all the ancient civilizations and dynasties in Greater Syria and Mesopotamia, such as the Sumeriyun, the Ashuriyun, the Kinaniyun. I refrain from using the term Semites for its mythological implication. One important point to start with should be said about Christianity. It's a new religion for all nations. Go and preach all nations. اذهبوا وتلمذوا جميع الأمم. It's not a uniform of Judaism. Christianity trashed all the Jewish rituals and Sharia, and there is no more Sabbath, no more circumcision, no more kosher and no kosher. It's a brand new religion. It's not a reform. Didn't Jesus Christ say, not what enters man's mouth that makes it filthy, but what comes out of it. لَيْسَ مَا يَدْخُلْ فَمَا الْإِنسَانِ يُلَى النَّسْ بَلْ مَا يَخْرُجُ مِنْ. Christianity as a new religion is an endogenous plant of Arabian Middle East. That's where it was born, and that's where it's flourished. It was born in Palestine, I prefer Canaan, and from Palestine it spread to all directions into lands with Arabs. Jesus Christ spent much of his life in Palestine, in Al-Nasirah, Nazareth, Al-Majdal, Magdala, and Kufr Nahum. I don't know how to say it in Latin. Kaparna, whatever. From Palestine, Christianity spread into lands inhabited with Arabs. Into Syria, the Arabian Peninsula, Mesopotamia or Iraq, and Egypt, as you can see in this map. The green shade here just reflects what came to be known the Fertile Crescent, or Al-Hilal al-Khasib. Second important point that should be mentioned about Christianity, it's a faith of martyrdom, Deen Shahada. For in the first 3 centuries, early Christians had to survive in 2 hostile and vicious environments, pagan Rome and the Jewish clergies. Later on, from the 4th to 7th century, persecution of Christians took place by the Byzantine Empire and, this is remarkable, by the church itself. From the year 325, when Constantine declared Christianity as the official religion of his empire, we became faced with this, I would call, brutal reality, where we have the empire of the church as well as the church of the empire. Christianity is, as I said, the daughter of Arabian Middle East. And Arabian Middle East formed the cradle where Christianity flourished. For Arabs were among the first adherents to the new faith. Saint Paul, upon leaving Damascus and go to preach his new faith, said in his epistle to the Galatians, I went first and at once to Arab land. And in fact, he spent several months, maybe over a year, in the Syrian desert. And at the year 40 AD, Saint Paul himself Christianized the unbought king, Al-Harith IV, Al-Harith al-Rabi, at year 40 AD. One find early, from the very beginning, Arabian congregation, churches, monasteries, and theological institutions. Madaris Lahutiya, theological institutions. Remember the first 4 Madaris Lahutiya, where the theology of Christianity was formulated and Christianized, were in Antakya, Syria, Alexandria, Egypt, Ar-Raha and Nusaybin in Suraqiya, Syria and Iraq. One also find that many high-ranking clergies, saints, monks, theologians, and importantly martyrs were Arabs. High-ranking clergies. Remember the first church of Christianity in Jerusalem that was formed right after Jesus died or disappeared. The first bishop or head of that state was Yaqub, half-brother of Jesus. The second was Sim'an. Sim'an is an Arab guy from Najd. If you look at the books of the history of the church, you will find that. Both Yaqub and Sim'an were killed either by Rome or by the Jews. So were all but one of the next 6 bishops of this first church. There are so many saints that are Arabs that one cannot count. And I want to point to make an observation here. Many Arabic proper names were modified by the church to become Greek names. And I'll give you an example. Sophronius, the patriarch of Jerusalem in the 7th century, his real name is Abdullah. That's Sophronius. Look in the books of that talk about the history of the church. Another example. Saint Erythius, the guy who was slaughtered with all his people in Al-Yaman in the mid-4th century. Saint Erythius is Al-Harith ibn Kalb, and that incident of slaughtering all the Christians of Yemen is reported in the Aramaic books of history of Christianity as well as in the Quran, Hadithat al-Ukhdud, and mentioned in detail in Surah al-Buruj. In the Quran. Theologians. There were 7 what can be translated as global conventions, مجامع مسكونية of the church. The first one was 325 AD and was called upon by Constantine himself and convened in Nicaea. And the last one was at 687 AD in the time of the rule of Abd al-Malik bin Marwan. In each and every one of these مجامع مسكونية, Arab theologians participated and helped from the core in crystallizing and formulating the Christian histories. Several Arabian tribes were Christians. Everybody knows a large and vicious, so somehow, tribe of Taghlib. They all were Christians. So is the tribe of Ghassan that formed a kingdom in southern Syria. And major Christian community could be found also in other tribes like Kalb, Tanukh, Iyad, Tay, many Arab saints, Rahib Buhayra, Warqa ibn Nawfal, Al-Qis ibn Sa'id al-Iyadi, and many others. This does not mean, that's very important, that Christianity was dominant in the Arabian Peninsula. No, pagan practice was a dominant. But it had significant, very significant presence in the Arabian Peninsula itself. More importantly, several Arabian kingdoms were Christian kingdoms. We'll look at them one by one. This is Suraqia, Syria and Iraq. Here we see the kingdom of Ar-Raha. This unique kingdom where it represents the first state on earth whose official religion is Christianity. Four, Al-Abjar the Ninth, Al-Abjar al-Tasi, one of the Raha kings, declared Christianity as the official religion of his kingdom. And the people there were Christians too. Here is Tadmor or Palmyra in foreign languages in Syria. This is also unique. We all remember the famous queen of Tadmor, Zenobia. That's not her name. Her real name is Azaba bint Amr. She was not Christian, but she looked favorably at the Christians, and she had several high-ranking clergies of Christians as her advisors in her palace. Here are Al-Ghassasina, Ghassan in southern Syria in Quran. And here are Al-Anbat in Petra in Jordan, present-day Jordan. And here is the famous kingdom of Al-Hira, or the kingdom of Al-Manadhira, or Al-Tanukhiyin, or Al-Lakhamiyin, where in this kingdom, really, you should go to the books and look how many saints and how many churches and how many monasteries were there formed. Suffice to mention the Derhind, who was built by the wife of one of these kings of Al-Hira, Al-Nu'man ibn Amr al-Qais. And the kings of Al-Hira, Al-Manadhira, were not Christians until the end of the 4th century, beginning of the 5th century, when Al-Nu'man ibn Amr al-Qais adopted Christianity. Okay, we'll move to the second stop, which will take some time, the relation between Christianity and Islam. I would declare right up front, the hallmark attitude of Islam as a religion toward Christianity and other religious as well as ethnic groups can be described by three words: tolerance, respect, and protection. And protection is a key word here. This is evident from the holy scripts of Islam as well as from the policy and practice of the Prophet Muhammad and his successors. I want to qualify this statement by saying up front, incidents of persecution or harassment or intolerance did take place. We should not deny that. However, they were not the rule. They were the exception. And we can go in those incidents. I don't find any reason why to go into them now. If we look at the Quran, and we'll focus the talk about Christians, but every now and then I will mention other groups of faith or ethnicity. The Christians in the Quran and for Islam are the people of the book, Ahlul Kitab. Therefore, according to the Quran instruction, they should have complete freedom of worship, absolute freedom, and they should be protected. Let's look at Virgin Mary. Folks, according to the Quran, Virgin Mary is virgin, even after giving birth to Jesus. وَنَفَخْنَا فِيهَا مِنْ رُوحِنَا. Note the wording. Ruhina, Christians say, Ar-Ruh al-Qudus, impregnated Mary. Mary is the only female mentioned by name in the Quran, at least 34 times. There are two chapters, surahs in the Quran titled after Mary, Surah Maryam, and Surah Al-Umran. Umran is Mary's father, Maryam bint Umran. Not just for those who like linguistic detectiveness, Umran, his Aramaic name is Yuakim. Yuakim, Yuqim, Yabni, Yu'ammir, Umran. Jesus is the word of God. This statement about Jesus is not in the Gospels. It is in the Quran. Kalimatullah. I will add, Islam and the Quran reject the divinity of Jesus, so do I, and do not believe that Jesus was crucified and killed, so do I. However, an important commandment in the Quran, there shall be no coercion in matters of faith. So you accept the other. لا إكراه في الدين. Part of what I said for anybody who is interested can be found in these few references from the Quran itself, from different surahs. Let's move to the Prophet Muhammad and his policy. I will illustrate three examples. At year 622, when Muhammad and his follower left Mecca, ran away to Al-Madinah, from that year on he started sending missions to various parts of the area, Arabia and adjacent areas. One of these missions he sent to Al-Yaman, and significant Christian majority was community was there. The Christians of Al-Yaman, aggregating mainly around Najran area, refused to convert to Islam, and they insisted they should meet with the Prophet Muhammad. This happened in the year 631, where at a time when Muhammad was literally in control of all Arabia. Strong man, the strongest man in the area. This delegation came and met with Muhammad in Al-Madina, and between them a very civilized dialogue took place. It's civilized by the standards of the 21st century, where Muhammad accepted their refusal to adopt Islam as religion, and they went back to Yemen unharmed and continued to practice their religion. Also, second example, 10 or 15 years ago, writing of the ancient monks in Sina were found in Aramaic, and those writings mention there the pledge that Muhammad gave the Christians of Sinai for complete freedom of worship and protection of the holy places. And Sinai did have several monasteries and whatnot. The third and last one of these missions that Muhammad sent was sent to the Ghassasina, which were in a way guard dogs of the Romans and then the Byzantines. They were not allies, they were under the control of the Romans. One mission was sent to Al-Ghassasina and to the Romans or the Byzantines, and that mission was headed by Al-Harith bin Umayr al-Azdi. However, the king of Ghassan, Shurahbil bin Amr, killed the head of the mission. So Muhammad was outraged, assembled an army of 3,000 fighters, and sent them to fight Al-Ghassasina and Al-Byzantine in the famous battle of Mu'ta, which exists currently in present-day Jordan, maybe in the real estate of the Al Saud family, I'm not sure. It took place in August 629. August 629. I mentioned that because I want you to pay attention to the commandment Muhammad gave his field commanders. Don't fight an elderly, a child or a woman. Don't destroy a home or uproot a tree. Don't kill an animal except for food. That's exactly what the Zionists are doing in their genocidal wars against Arabs. Just following to the letter what Muhammad gave. 4 years later, Abu Bakr, the first Khalifa, assembled an army of 30,000 fighters with several field commanders and sent them to battle the Romans, Byzantines, in the famous Battle of Ajnadin that took place in April 634 in Palestine between Yafa and Al-Khalil or Hebron. And Abu Bakr gave his army commanders the same commandment as Muhammad. أوصيكم بعشر كلمات فاحفظوهن. لا تقاتلوا شيخا فانيا ولا صبيا صغيرا ولا امرأة ولا منعزلا بصومعة. Those who can read Arabic can continue reading. So in general, one can say about policy and practice of Arab Muslim rulers, freedom of worship, absolute freedom of worship, to the extent of carrying the crosses everywhere, ringing the bells of the churches and whatnot. and protection of all places of worship, not only of Christians. Guys, it's a decree from Uthman bin Affan and Ali ibn Abi Talib to protect the idols of the pagans in Afghanistan. You cannot touch them. They are properties of other people. Well, those idols, if you remember, were destroyed 10, 15 years ago by Taliban. I know, I don't know about you, Taliban is made in USA. Greater Syria and to a certain extent Egypt too remained with Christian majority. The books tell you remained for at least 2 centuries with Christian majority. No, they remained with Christian majority until the Crusaders attack at 1096. I will touch on it later. 5 centuries. Remarkably, Damascus, the capital of the largest empire on earth, the Umayyad Empire, which is a Muslim empire, remained with Christian majority all through. Let's just snapshot on Fatih Bayt al-Maqdis, the conqueror of Jerusalem, which took place in 638 AD. The Arab Islamic Muslim armies surrounded the city. They requested from the people there either become Muslims like us with our duties and our rights, or pay the jizya, the tax, or we will go in. So the Jerusalemites refused to surrender the city except to Umar ibn Khattab, the Khalifa. So Umar came from Al-Madinah and was welcomed by Sophronius Abdullah, the Patriarch of Jerusalem, and offered him the keys to the city. He welcomed him as an ally, as a friend, not as an occupier, and invited him to pray in the Church of the Holy Sepulchre. Umar refused to pray in the church. We all know why. That civilized and wise decision that he made not to pray in the church. He prayed 80 meters away, where we have now the Dome of the Rock, Qubbat al-Sakhra, and Masjid Umar, Umar Mosque. Umar gave the Jerusalemite his famous pledge for complete freedom of worship, all what I mentioned there. This is not verbatim. It's not verbal. This is a historic document written, witnessed and signed by 4 Arab army commanders. And it's known as Al-Ahd al-Umariyya. I like sometimes to nickname it the Magna Carta. During the Umayyad dynasty, that phenomena of saints and clergy everywhere during the Umayyad dynasty from 660 until 750, it's really remarkable and striking. I will not go into details, but I will give you one example. John the Damascene, Yuhanna al-Dimashqi, known in Christian culture as Yuhanna al-Dhahabi al-Fam, or Fam al-Dhahab, one of the greatest theologians of Christianity in all times. He is the one who wrote the Sunday Mass and helped formulate many of the theological thorny problems of Christianity. This guy grew up in the Umayyad palaces. For his father, Sim'an al-Dimashqi, was a minister under the rule of Abd al-Malik ibn Marwan. Abd al-Malik ibn Marwan, in my mind, is one of the greatest kings on earth. He was tolerant, wise. He built Al-Aqsa Mosque. He engraved currency and put his picture on it. He didn't put a sword and La ilaha illallah there. He put his picture on the dinar. And he Arabized all his ministries. Arab al-Dawawin, from Aramaic or Syriac to Arabic. This great guy, Khalifa, is portrayed many in many places in books of history and literature, sitting in his palace. On one side there will be Sim'an al-Dimashqi. On the other side of his will be the famous Arab Christian poet Al-Akhtal al-Taghlibi, each one carrying a huge cross on his chest. Each one stinks from, his breath stinks from wine. And we'll be discussing with them various issues. Just to add a little bit of spice to this talk, I will mention 2 anecdotes between Abd al-Malik and Al-Akhtal. Once Abd al-Malik asked Al-Akhtal, you know, he would be listening to Al-Akhtal reciting poetry, and each time Abd al-Malik would love a line of poetry, will interrupt him and say, "Repeat, thou enemy of God. A'id ya adu Allah." Once he asked Al-Akhtal, "Why don't you convert to Islam?" So Al-Akhtal answered him with 3 lines of poetry that can be translated as follow. "I will never fast Ramadan. I will never eat halal meat. I will never stand up and scream like an ass, come for prayer. But I will drink wine all night and bow to it الدان. ولست بصائم رمضان طوعا، ولست بآكل لحم الأضاحي، ولست بواقف أبدا أنادي كمثل العير حي على الفلاح، ولكني سأشربها شمولا وأسجد عند منبلج الصباح. عبد الملك didn't cut his head. He told him, أحسنت يا عدو الله. That's عبد الملك. Once عبد الملك asked him, describe it for me, how is it to be drunk? صف لي السكر يا عدو الله. الأخطر said, I'm worried. I may offend your throne. He said, describe and you will be safe. So I cannot translate the line of poetry that Al-Akhtal said, but it means, in short, when I am drunk, I feel I am the king and you are nothing. إذا ما نديمي علني ثم علني ثلاث زجاجات لهن هدير غدوت أجر الثوب مني كأنني عليك أمير المؤمنين أمير. Aziz mentioned a lot about the contribution of Christian Arabs to Arab Islamic civilization in all fields of knowledge. I'm not going to elaborate more on that. Remember Thabit ibn Qarra? Remember Isa ibn Usaid al-Nusrani? Remember the son of Thabit ibn Qarra, Sanan ibn Thabit, and his grandson, Thabit ibn Sanan. They all were Christians. Here we have a thorny issue. Crusaders. They stayed in the Syria for about over 1.5 centuries. They were badly defeated by Salah al-Din al-Ayyubi in the Battle of Hattin at 1187. Look at that map there. This is Hattin. Then the Mamalik of Egypt kicked the last crusaders out of the area in around 1266. Just a side note, I credit Egypt for saving Bilad al-Sham twice. Once from the crusader in these two battles, and once from the Mughals in the famous battle of Ain Jalut in 1260 AD. It's only 10 kilometers southwest of Hattin. However, I think it's a good idea to go and read the books that are written in English, I don't know other Latin language, and in Arabic about the crusaders area, and not the mainstream books that publicized by the imperial powers, no. You will find that the crusaders, they targeted first the Christians because they differ. Like Daesh are targeting the Sunnis first because they differ with them on issues, certain issues of Christianity. And there was a reported mass annihilation in Constantinople, Constantinople. There were hardly any Arab there of Christians in Constantinople, Jerusalem, Antioch, Antakya. Well, folks, if I'm going to be killed because I'm Christian, I better convert to Islam. And that's where the mass conversion to Islam took place. And that's recorded. Okay, we'll move to the last era, the An-Nahda. Thank you, Aziz, for calling An-Nahda. I couldn't find a word for Renaissance. In the 19th, 20th century, Aziz alluded to that. So they spearheaded, Christian Arabs did spearhead, together with all other believers or non-believers from other religions, they did spearheaded the Arab Renaissance in 20th, 19th century. Al-Bustani, Al-Bustaniyin, Al-Yazijiyin, Al-Ma'lufiyin, Al-Rihaniyin, all these are Christian families. And they reserved, they did contribute very, very significantly to preserving the Arabic tongue. And here, friends, I'm going to put a statement. It's my conviction. You want to believe it? Go ahead. You don't want, you can fight me about it. In Arab and Middle East, there is no Christian minority and Muslim majority. I do not believe in that. There is an absolute majority of Arabs with variety of religious beliefs. This is very important to recognize that. We should recognize that and act in accordance. Christian Arabs today. Also, Aziz did allude to this. When we talk about Christian Arabs, one can find two major classes. Those Arabs that are Christians, and they can trace their ancestries, most of them, if not all of them, can trace their ancestry back to one Arabian tribe or another. And there are those Arabs that some of them, and important, some of them, not all of them, like to think that they are separate ethnicity. And these are the Assyrians et al., Al-Ashuriyun, the Syrian, Wal-Kildaniyun, Wal-Babyliyun, and Matmat, in Suraqiya, Greater Syria, and Iraq, as well as the Aqbat in Egypt. The Armenians, we can leave them aside. They are dispersed everywhere in Bilad al-Sham. They have their own home country. To me, the Assyrians et al., all of them, culturally, historically, and whatever, as well as the Copts, they are Arabs. And we'll touch on that point later when we deal with what to do with the current crisis. Wow, I'm almost done. Just before that, some demography, because the word demography is mentioned, and I hate to do that, is mentioned in the title. These figures for Christian Arabs were taken at the turn of the 20th century, i.e. before George W. Bush occupied Iraq. So you can see the highest number of Christians are found in Egypt. Small number, but high percent of Christians are found in Lebanon, representing almost one-third of the Lebanese. The figure about the Christians in Palestine is taken from pre-1967, because after the occupation by the Zionist state in 1967, many Christian Arabs left, just escaped hardship. An example, Beit Lahem, Greater Beit Lahem, i.e. Beit Lahem, Beit Sahur, and Beit Jala. In the 60s, there were 55 to 60% Christians there. Now they hardly reach 20%. So I took the figure before the occupation of the West Palestine. In summary, around 30 million Arabs that happen to be Christians in the Arab world, representing almost 10%. That decline in Christianity is alarming, in Christian Arabs, is really alarming. Because as Aziz said, and as I believe, the richness of our home countries is by this mosaic. There should be room for everyone, regardless of his religious belief or ethnic roots. And if you look in the turn of the end of the turn of the 20th century, right before World War I, the figures were 20 to 25% of all Arabs are Christians. That dropped to half upon the occupation of Iraq. And today, at 2013, this is a typo, not 2011, 2013, the figure I found most quoted is around 5%. Take or give. That's sad. That's really sad. What's happening and why? In my mind, we can list numerous factors that contributed to that. And we can debate each factor. But I put here three factors that, in my mind, are the most important. No, two of them are important. One, I saw it quoted in every reference I went to, but I don't think it's important. The most important factor in my mind is that conscious or unconscious tendency of Christian Arabs to head west. No, they're going to the Christian West. We are Christians, they are Christians, everything is fine. They don't know that east is east and west is west and they will never meet. So they go. Any hardship. In the 1860s, 1870s, that clashes between the Druze and the Maronites in Al-Jabal in Lebanon. It was not sectarian clashes. It was a political position. The Druze do not want France to dominate. The Maronites want France to dominate. And many people killed. Not one single Druze left. Half of the Christians or Maronite left. The same in the famine in World War I. So this is important. And I will touch on that point in today's crisis. That's the thing that I find it quoted everywhere. I don't buy that. It's a very marginal factor. There is no lower birth rate among Christians as compared to Sunnis or Shias. Look at me, guys. My father is one out of 16. 11 boys and 5 girls, no twins, one mother. I don't know how many fathers, but one mother. More important than this, imperial powers, in particular the USA, because that's what we're, this is the power we have currently the problem with. We all acknowledge that whenever there is an imperial power dominating an Arab country, always these primitive instincts of or feelings of sectarianism and alienation surface, and they are propagated by the imperial power. And the best who does that is the imperial USA, much better than the British. And we know United States has an imperial project for Middle East. The new Middle East, to fragment Middle East further, more fragmentation than what Sykes and Pico did. And to base that fragmentation on a sectarian basis. If they can, they would like also to make it on an ethnic basis, Akkad and Arabs. But majority of Akkads are in Turkey, not in the Arab. Watan al-Arabi, no. Now, to achieve that, Middle East cannot be mosaic, should be devoid of Christians. So the divide becomes Sunni Shi'i. And that's even spelled out by money. And we hear many of these Christian Zionists in the US and in France. Aziz said, kalimat haq yurad biha batil. I say kalimat batil yurad biha batil. They calling the Christians come to us. Get off our backs, that's what I tell them. So we hear Christian Zionists want to protect Christian Arabs from atrocities from Islam. No, folks. We need protection against the West. We don't need the protection of the West. Arab Christians need no protection of the West. Let's move to this, and I will spend only 5 to 7 minutes on that. To the current crisis with ISIS, and I call it ISIS et al, and the rest. Include Jabhat al-Nusra, Jabhat Khorasan, Jaish al-Islam, Al-Qaeda, Al-Saud, everybody. Of these fanatics, religious fanatics, and militants, and takfiriyin. If anybody can find for me English words for takfiriyin, I would love to hear it. That anybody who differs with them in a minute thing, he's infandim, he's kafir, so they yukafiruna. So they kill anyone who does not agree with them on whatever minute issues. This ISIS relies heavily on the preaching of Muhammad bin Abdul Wahhab. And that's the practice of the Saudis. Now they are afraid from ISIS for their political reasons. However, ISIS drew its resources from Saudi Arabia, or from the Saudis. I hate to call Saudi Arabia. Both of them rely on few of the fuqaha, very few, exemplified by this guy, Ibn Taymiyyah, who lived in Damascus in the 13th century, where these people, they interpret sacred writing of the Quran and the Hadith the way they want, the way it serves their agenda, no more, no less. And here, it's a very important notion to make. The value of any sacred writing, whether it is Quran or Old Testament or Gospels, the value of that writing is primarily, not totally, derived from the value of the people who deal with it. When those people were in the stature of Abdul Malik bin Marwan and Umar bin Khattab, Islam was fine. But when they are in the Qazamiyya of Al-Qardawi and Al-Saud and Al-Baghdadi and all that, see what's happening. These guys, all of them, the et al, in their endeavor, killed more Sunnis than they killed Shias. That's known. And they killed more Shias than Christians. So the issue is not Christians per se. The issue is depriving Middle East from Christianity is a loss. And that's all what is there. And they are supported by the United States. Yes, they are. Now because of Erbil, where the oil places in northern Iraq, Erbil, they're trying to fight them, but mazah, it's not serious. They're supported by the US and by the Arab monarchy. And let's spell it out, by the Saudis, the Qataris, and the Emiratis, yes. Could be, but the Saudis for sure. I will back up, will not include the Emiratis. Okay. However, we should not throw all our problems on the other. I think we say an idiom in at least Al-Jalil in Bilad al-Sham, dudu min udu. The problem is from within. Sadly, present day Arabian societies is a fertile soil for religious fanatics. That's a fact. 50 to 60% of these militants that are fighting are Arabs. How do we deal with that? One thing that I wish we could hear and hear it loudly is that all Muslims, not only Christians, institutions and individuals should condemn this behavior and block it. Why Al-Azhar doesn't stand firmly against it? There is a word here and a word there. That's sad. Just I want to draw your attention to a parallel. I challenge anybody to prove me wrong, between the tactics of ISIS et al. And the Zionists and the church, at least until the French Revolution. Cancel anybody who does not agree with me. What to do? Patriotic feeling and affiliation. Al-Muwatana. This is very important. The regime or the state may alienate you, especially the regime, especially when the regime is not democratic, may alienate you. But you cannot alienate yourself. And what we see in current day Al-Watan Al-Gharabi, people alienate themselves. So alienation is a two-way street. And the harmful alienation is not that the state alienate you or the majority alienate you. It's when you feel do not belong to your watan, to your state. So muwatana is very important. There is a pathological conflict in terms of when present-day Arab person looks at what is the I, the self, and what is the other. That alienation, which I call it self-alienation, is reflected in this pathological diagram in the top here, where the self, or al-ana, becomes a circle that has hardly a space for the immediate family. Maybe sometimes for the other fellows of the same sect. But everybody else around is the other. This is very, very similar to the, Aziz may know better than me, to the autoimmune diseases, where the immune system starts looking at self components in our body as foreign and fight it and destroy it. And the result is a devastating disease. This is a devastating disease. Instead, what should be and what should everybody consider? Your society is your ana, the whole society, with Akrads and Arman and Ashuriyin and Masihiyin and Sunni and Shia. And the akhar or the other should be shrink just for the other. In that sense, I would like to look at Arabism. I said I am an Arab nationalist, but I do not advocate Arabism ideology. No, Arabism is not an ideology. It should be a civilized national frame for cultural identity that will have enough space. The ana is huge there, to include all groups of our society. We live together. We cannot otherwise. In that frame of Arabism as cultural identity, not only there will be space for everyone, you cannot separate between cultural Arabism and Islam. Cannot. Weakening or strengthening cultural Arabism will weaken or strengthen Islam. And that tight link between Islam and Arabism is unique to the Arab world. It's not shared by Pakistanis and Indians, because the Quran is in Arabic. The civilization and the faith were spread to whole earth in Arabic. The holy places of Islam are all in Arab land. So there should be no separation between Arabism and Islam. And here, there's an important point that at least in the 20th century, some Islamists were afraid that Arabism will replace Islam. No, they complement each other. They do not replace each one. When you look at Arabism not as ethnic, racist, or ideology. When Turkey wanted to be secular and to go west, it got hold on its Turkism, on its national identity, and downplayed Islam. Response of the people in Bilad al-Sham, they cut hold on their Arabism, and therefore they strengthened and preserved the Quran. The attempts of translating the Quran into Turkish were well known. And those Christians were among the others who stood firmly against that. So we preserved our Islam component as Christians by adhering to Arabism. When France occupied Algiers, they imposed French culture and civilization on the Algerians, and they tried to replace the Arabic with the French. Farnasat al-Jazair, the French language. The Algerian people got hold on their Quran, and thus they preserved their Arabism and their language. So no contradiction between Arabism as civilized cultural identity and Islam. And in that regard, as Aziz mentioned, Islam is an important component of every Arab, whether he is Christian or Yazidi or Sunni or Shia, it doesn't matter. Lastly, I think when we cannot go and fight, when we cannot go and make an impact on the field, the best for each one of us, start with yourself. If you look upon yourself in unhealthy, in terms of social belonging, in a healthy way, so your kids will be, and so your friends will be, and that's how things spread. As my grandmother used to say, one hair plus one hair will have a beard. So you start from yourself. You cannot correct the world if you are not corrected. And I will leave you with an epilogue from my personal experience. My parents, who I said were Christians, they believed in God. I don't know what God they believed in. They never went to church. They went only for social occasions, funeral, memorial service, or wedding. But they always mentioned God. My brother is married to a girl from a Sunni family. When he told my parents he wanted to marry Nisreen, Sunni girl, they know her because she was in school with him. The issue of sect or religion didn't come. My mom told him, I remember that, I love Nisreen more than I love my daughter, Allah Haniku. Yeah. My two daughters, each one is married to an Arab guy. One is Lebanese, his family is a Shia, and the other is Sudanese, his family from the Sunni sect. When I called, according to tradition, when the father of the groom would ask the hand of your daughter, you said, give me 2-3 weeks until I consult with her uncles, a'mamha wa akhwalha. So I called back home. Nobody said an issue about, oh, he is Muslim. No, one brother would ask, is he even halal? Another would say, is he educated? My sister would say, is he handsome? Nobody raised that issue of different sect because we don't care. We are not. I am not Christian. And for me, Muhammad and Abdul Qadir are not Muslims. For me, are fellow Arabs. So that's the medium we were raised in, and that's how my children were raised in. And I wish everybody would look at it from this positive view. And I'm sorry I went into too much length, and thank you for your patience. And any question?
Well, thank you very much.
Just, I'm sorry, one last references. I recommend for anyone to read that book by that was mentioned by Aziz, Al-Mahdi Al-Arabi, Tariq Al-Masihiyya Al-Mashriqiyya Ala Mada Al-Fayyam, by Samih Ghanadri. It's being translated into English now.
What you just heard was a recording of the remarks made by Shawqi Qassis, Arab-American scientist, author, and translator. He made those remarks at an event sponsored by the Arab-American Educational Foundation, right here in Houston. It was held last month on November 14th at Rice University. And that does it for the show today. Thanks for listening. Technology Bites is coming up next. This is Saeed, executive producer and host of Arab Voices. Until we meet next Wednesday, peace on earth.
show, you can find KPFT on the social networking sites Twitter and Facebook? You certainly can, and we'd love you to add us as a friend and get us connected with friends of yours. Join our fan page and check out a special video message from General Manager Dwayne Bradley, as well as keep up with KPFT programmers and staff. Visit facebook.com/KPFT Houston to join us. To follow us, visit twitter.com/KPFT. With both, you can link up with other KPFT listeners, get the latest news about the station, and find lots of extras. It's fun, so catch up with KPFT online. Again, on Twitter, visit twitter.com/KPFT. On Facebook, visit us at facebook.com.